The Tony Greig Show.
Welcome to the Tony Greig Show on Cricket Info Talk.
News this week.
After the 10-wicket capitulation in the second test match at Headingley, England's problems were compounded by another hopeless first innings batting display. South Africa took a vice-like grip on the first day of the third test after dismissing England for a paltry 231. Michael Vaughan was dismissed for a golden duck, while Alistair Cook made 76. He played well. Ian Bell got 50 and Andrew Flintoff a very welcome 36 not out. That got him going, I think. They were the only batsmen to make any runs of note. Andre Nell, Jacques Cullis were both outstanding with the ball, each taking 3 wickets at Edgbaston, but Flintoff gave England hope after removing Graham Smith for only 7 late on to leave the South Africans at 38 for 1 at stumps on day 1. So a good day for South Africa, really. Andrew Flintoff then took 4 wickets as England hauled themselves back into contention. The all-rounder uprooted Jacques Cullis' off stump for 64 before removing AB de Villiers late on to leave the tourists at 256 for 6 at stumps on day 2. Flintoff had earlier dismissed opener Neil McKenzie for 72. He also has been playing pretty well. An entertaining day's play ended in complete contrast to how it began, with Flintoff bowling as menacingly as his fabled second inning spell against Australia at the same ground in the 2005 Ashes series. Day 3 belonged to Paul Collingwood, who not only rescued England but also resurrected his international career with the most courageous, determined century imaginable. Coming to the crease with England on 104 for 4, leading by just 21 runs, he put on 115 in a thrilling 23-over stand with Kevin Peterson, who struck, by the way, 94 at stumps on day 3. England were 297 for 6, leading South Africa by 214, with the match suddenly transformed. Just a word on the shot Peterson was out to. He was on 94, and despite the fieldsman back at mid-off and mid-on, he tried to hit a 6 for his century. I've got to say that this was one of the most irresponsible decisions I've ever seen in Test cricket. I know Peterson's a top player, but that shot also gave me the feeling that he had absolutely no regard for the plight of the team. Put bluntly, it was selfish in the extreme. Day 4 turned out to be a dreadful day for England. They were bowled out for 363 despite the fighting 135 from Collingwood, and believe it or not, the wayward Mornay Morkel ended up with the best figures, 4 for 97. Mind you, Callis, Ntini, Nell and Harris all contributed. It was Graham Smith who decided he wanted a day off. Faced with a target of 281 and struggling at 93 for 4, Smith took the game by the scruff of the neck. He made 154 not out, and with a little help from AB de Villiers and Mark Boucher, batted with great composure to hand their side a 5-wicket triumph. England will say Smith was the beneficiary of 2 poor umpiring decisions, but they also botched up a run-out attempt, and the rest, of course, is history. Edgbaston has provided heartbreak for South Africa in the past, but 9 years on from that lowest point in the 1999 World Cup, they put that nasty memory to rest by claiming their first series win in England since 1965. While Smith will be on a high, spare a thought for Michael Vaughan. His reign as England's captain will definitely come under very close scrutiny, and so it should. His performance with the bat recently has been substandard, and I think that's putting it mildly. And there has been some speculation in the English press that Vaughan may even resign as the captaincy, although I find that very hard to believe. One of the things you must remember about Michael Vaughan is he's been through these bad periods before and bounced back very well when everyone thought that perhaps it was all over for him. But it'll be interesting to see. Watch this space. It takes a bit of character to bounce back the way India have done in Sri Lanka, and that character came in the form of a swashbuckling first innings double century by Virendra Sehwag. Until Sehwag took the Sri Lankan bowling by the scruff of the neck, India's batsmen, put simply, had no answer to the mysteries of Muthiah Muralidharan and Ajantha Mendis. Attack is often the best form of defence, and we all know that Sehwag knows no other way. He also passed 5,000 test runs with his fifth test double century and became only the second Indian after Sunil Gavaskar to carry his bat through a test innings. It's a great performance, really. This was exactly what India needed, as the rest of the Indian batting still looks very vulnerable, with Gambier and Laxman the only other batsmen to reach double figures in the first innings. Ajantha Mendis again bowled beautifully, taking 6 for 117. Murali got 2 for 93. Sri Lanka then got their first innings off to a good start, and at one stage were 137 for 1, after Melinda Warnapurna and Kumar Sangakkara got things going. Abhijan Singh ended their stand and went on to take 6 for 102, a good performance by him. That's his 22nd five-wicket test haul, and he was well supported by leg spinner Anil Kumble, who as usual didn't let the side down, took a useful 3 for 81. India went into the second innings with a small but handy lead. India then appeared to seize the initiative after attacking knocks from Gautam Gambhir. He got 74. Virender Sehwag, more runs, 50 this time. Rahul Dravid, 44, and Sachin Tendulkar, 31, before losing their way. They were 1 for 144, rather like the Sri Lankans were, before slipping to 269 all out in their second innings with Murali Dhiran, Mendes and Vash sharing the wickets. So Sri Lanka need 307 to win, and at the time of recording, Sri Lanka are struggling, having lost Warnapurna, Sangakkara and Jayawardena. They now require 273 with 7 wickets in hand. India would have to be favourites to win and level the series. I've been saying for a while now that the bubble is about to burst yet again in West Indian cricket. Julian Hunt gave us all the impression initially that he might be the man to sort the West Indian problems out. But it seems to me that as things stand right now, nothing much has changed. I was hoping that the arrival of Alan Stanford on the West Indian cricket scene may have resulted in the sort of partnership that developed between Kerry Packer and the Aussie board once they'd sorted their initial problems out. This is not happening, that's for sure. In fact, Stanford's involvement seems to have gone the opposite way and made things worse. The players aren't happy, the sponsors are fighting amongst themselves, the West Indies Cricket Board has internal problems, and Alan Stanford seems more interested in England these days. Now we hear that the one man who managed to get the players united, their current captain Chris Gayle, has resigned. I haven't spoken to Gayle, so I don't know his reasons for taking this drastic step, and believe me, it is a huge step to take. Chris Gayle, I know, enjoyed the captaincy, and he was doing a pretty good job. West Indies cricket needs its best players desperately right now, so if Gayle were to proceed with his resignation, who knows where the current problems will take them. Like all teams, the West Indies need strong leadership. The days of Clive Lloyd seem so far away, but that's what they need, a strong captain who has the respect and backing of the players and the board.
What's eating Tony Greig?
It's interesting to follow the power plays that are popping up all over the place in the cricket world these days. India is the standout powerhouse in terms of cricket clout because if they tour any country, the return to that country is huge. And of course that money comes by way of television rights. That, however, doesn't seem to be enough. India, it seems, wants the power in terms of the votes as well, so they can influence the decisions that are made at ICC level. That is also perfectly understandable as long as everyone remains level-headed. Just recently, things seem to have changed quite dramatically. The entrepreneurs have arrived in cricket big time. 30 years ago, it was Kerry Packer. Just recently, Texan Alan Stanford, the ICL Subhash Chandra arrived on the scene. Then India decided to go one step further and invite all the Indian entrepreneurs to buy into the IPL franchises. South Africa and England are also reported to be courting the UAE entrepreneurs. What impact all this will have on the game will be interesting to look back at in a few years' time. Entrepreneurs normally take over if there are big bucks to be made, or if they're not satisfied with that, they pack their bags and go home. So cricket certainly changing direction a little bit. The entrepreneurs are about to have a field day.
My favourite cricketer.
I've always had great respect for cricketers who play above their station because they are normally great fighters. Take Paul Collingwood as an example. A natural athlete who made himself indispensable in both forms of the game and rose to become one of the finest fieldsmen in the world, capable of breathtaking moments in the covers and backward point. As a batsman, he plays straight and is aggressive. He is a medium pacer, and given the right conditions, he can be very useful. As we all know, Collingwood was recently dropped for the first time in 2 years. He was left out of the Headingley Test match against South Africa, only to be recalled in spite of no county form. In fact, all he's made is 92 first-class runs in the last 9 innings he's played. His performance in the first innings was a sight for sore eyes. He really did scratch around, but he came out in the second innings and made the rest of England's batsmen, with the exception of Peterson, look second rate by scoring a superb century, and what a century it was. This is the fighting spirit that has made Collingwood the respected cricketer he is. sometimes when cricketers play the way Collingwood did in the second innings, then go on to lose the test match, their performance is watered down somewhat. But I've got to say that the good judges, and hopefully quite a few of them are selectors, will realise that an innings like that can be a turning point in terms of a bad time with the bat. Collingwood certainly had that. Boy, what a character he is. And I must say, he's one of those guys that I respect.
One question only.
Right, the question of the week comes from Sina Narendran from Cleveland in the USA. He says, could you please compare Muthiah Muralidharan and Mendes with some of the spinning pairs of the past? Well, that's an interesting question, and it's also a hard one to answer because there have been so many good pairs of spinners. Having said that, there has never been a more successful spinner than Muralidharan. So that is a starting point. Mendes certainly had a phenomenal start to his career, but I want to see how he goes after having played everyone around the world at least once. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that mystery spinners are worked out by good players, and Mendes is going to have to prove that he is a great spinner without the mystery, and you can only do that with a little bit of time. I think the closest comparison to these two would be Ramadan and Valentine, that famous West Indian pair who probably are, well, let's have a look at them. Ramadan, a flicker of the middle finger, rather like Mendes. Valentine, not an off-spinner, but an orthodox spinner, who bowled left-arm orthodox, and they say, well, certainly his colleagues say, that rather like Murali, he could spin the ball on glass. And so that, for me, represents the closest comparison to these wonderful Sri Lankan spinners. Laker was orthodox, but Locke was considered a little suspect in terms of his action. They were also a very successful pair, an off-spinner and a left-arm orthodox spinner, but no real mystery there. The Indians, Prasanna, Bedi, Venkat, Chandra were all superb bowlers. Prasanna probably the best of them, an off-spinner. Bedi, a wonderful, loopy, left-arm orthodox spinner. Venkat just below Prasanna in terms of being deadly dangerous. And Chandra, very, very different. I suppose with the Indians at that in that era, they were just spin, spin, and more spin. And they weren't really a pair. They came at you at four at a time. It's hard to compare them with the current Sri Lankans. The Aussies will tell you that Grimmett and O'Reilly were the best spinners in the history of the game, and I can tell you that some of the stats that they pulled together would suggest that they weren't far away from it. And then, of course, Warne came along, but no partner for Warne, really, of any note. He did it mostly on his own. So, Senna, to be honest, I don't think it's possible to do justice to your question because we have such different views about comparisons like this, and, of course, a lot of us didn't see some of the players of yesteryear. Let me finish by saying that this year, facing the wily Muralidharan in his latter years and with that Dusra of his, and then down the other end having to front up to the young and mysterious Mendes, will be a huge challenge for batsmen until such time as they're exposed to Mendes a little bit longer. As I said before, he looks to me to be a very good bowler, but we need to judge him in a year's time. So hopefully that answers your question. Well, we've got a bit of good news for those of you who have been taking part in my show each week. The last show of each month, we've decided that we're going to involve some of you that send in questions, and believe me, we get a lot of them. What we're going to do is we're going to try and answer a few of those questions, a few more of them, but we're also going to involve a couple of you who, in fact, send in a lot of questions on the basis that we'll have a bit of a discussion. So there's an opportunity for those of you who are interested in cricket and who've been listening and loyal to the Crick Info show that I do. Perhaps you'd like to put yourselves up, and then, who knows, we may just end up having a chat together. Please don't forget to email your queries to tony@crickinfo.com. Don't forget to mention your name and the place where you're from. I'll pick the best question and answer it in next week's show. Thanks for your company. This is Tony for Crick Info Talk, signing off.
The Tony Greig Show on Crick Info Talk.